Welcome to Witta Digital's Unsupervised, a podcast series that brings you personal perspective from the front line of modern visual effects. This is a closed door session, so come on in and shut the door behind you. Hi, my name's Max, and today we have visual effects supervisor Chris White and animation supervisor Aidan Martin joining us.
You may remember our voices from the previous podcast about Space Force.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk to you about season 2 of Umbrella Academy.
And this is our second season working together on Umbrella.
Yeah, is there any difference between season 1 and season 2?
It did feel different because of the time period, and we were working with Pogo again. Because he was a baby chimp, there was, you know, a toddler chimp, it felt completely different.
Yeah.
And like the time period being in the 60s and it being more space race focused just made it feel like a completely different show.
Yeah.
Like, the show had a different tone.
Yeah. And also, I think because we were working on those specific characters and they weren't throughout every episode, it was more mysterious to me what the show, what was happening in the show.
That's
we
right.
Had our little snippets.
I guess on season 1, we had a lot more, we saw a lot more of what was going on either side of our shots and had a lot more context of what Pogo was doing in the series, whereas we were doing very contained, specific set pieces. And we had no idea what the story was either side of what we were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a bit more of a mystery.
The only thing that I think we knew or thought we knew was we had one shot of Diego lying on the ground and we're all like, oh my God, Diego dies.
Yeah.
Diego's dead.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that we thought we knew. Thank God that's not actually what happens. It's not how it turned out. But yeah, we didn't know anything other than that. We didn't see anything of the other characters.
No.
Other than Five killing everybody in the boardroom massacre and the little bits of the handler and what's her daughter's name? Lila. Those moments there. That's all we knew. And then so to see the whole thing in context was great.
Yeah.
But it was such a great series.
Yeah. And to see like all the how they developed all the characters and the look and feel of the whole 60s Dallas. Yeah, so the extent of our work on this show, we did Baby Pogo, we did A.J. Carmichael, which was the fish in the robotic
talking
body.
Goldfish.
Yep.
Ashabunkan goldfish.
Yeah, that was the majority of our work with those, which was across, what, maybe 4 episodes?
Episode 2, 5, 7, 9, and 10.
Yep.
Yeah, 5 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we could talk about A.J. Carmichael, because he's probably the one that we spent the most amount of design time with.
A.J. was a big deal, but it wasn't just A.J., it was the whole helmet, the bowl, the neck piece.
Yeah.
And even, you know, the suit and the tie and the shirt sitting on him.
A.J., I guess, as a character, because he was this fish that's in this robotic body. And I remember we first got the original sketches, which we thought were cool, you know, because it was just very strange and otherworldly.
Yeah, it was unusual.
You know, originally he had gloves and stuff on, so it just really felt like this robotic body. But I think it was a decision made on to actually show the hands, because it just added it.
Just made it even more
weirder. And we were trying to figure out, so I guess for us that was the first having to do such a complicated fish, animated fish, you know, talking fish.
Yeah, such a highly realistic animated talking fish, which we've never done before. The only fish we've ever really done are sort of a really background things. We haven't really done hero fish before, nor have we done a talking fish. And I remember early on, they were very, the show creators, Everett and Steve Blackman, were very conscious about him not looking like Nemo and being too cartoony.
Yeah, they were very much that he needs to look, he has to be a real fish. So we spent actually quite a lot of time, you know, with all his correct bones and movement and geometry and, you know, made it so that he was anatomically correct and only deviated slightly.
We only deviated slightly towards, after we'd gone as far as we could pushing the mouth shapes and particularly the eyes, we'd gotten as far as we could with his emotional range without using, you know, any eyebrows or blinks or anything like that. And eventually we got to a point where we had to start doing a little bit of some cheating with some eyelids not a lot, but just enough to shape a little bit of anger or fear, you know, pushing his lower lids up at some point.
Yeah.
Which we didn't go too far off the reservation, except for the fact that goldfish don't have no articulation in their in their brows.
Yeah.
Also, because he obviously he's a talking fish, has lots of dialogue, but fish don't have tongues. So the dialogue where he's saying phonemes that require like a D or an N or an S, which use a lot of tongue, we didn't really want to be looking straight down his mouth where you could see that he didn't have a tongue, and those shapes were a complete lie. But then again, he's a talking fish, so yeah, how's that working anyway?
Yeah.
Well, that was, I mean, it was part of it where you're talking about adding in the eyelids for expressions, that we added that, put that as part of his paint. Like, his spots were conveniently painted to imply these kind of slightly
some
angry
sort of facial features. Yeah.
So if you look at his spots close enough, you'll see he's got eyebrows and he's got a little patch of hair on the top of his head. And a little mustache.
He had a mustache? Yeah.
He's got a little mustache. So that's all like all those characteristics that we wanted to put in there as part of, you know, his look.
One of the trickier shots for me was when the handler grabs AJ, pulls him out of the water, and you know, some last remarks, and then whoop, gobbles him up in one shot, and it was like a 400 frame shot. And I think they had designed the shot so that the handler, who's played by Kate Walsh, she's supposed to be holding him from the tail, but we had a couple of issues. I don't think they'd really considered how big AJ was, because he was about 15 centimeters long from nose to tail, which is pretty, it was reasonably, I don't know if that's, I'm gesturing 15 centimeters, but I don't know if that is, which is reasonably long. And then the other problem was that her eye line, she was looking at her fingers, not below her hand. So we had to go through a couple of iterations figuring out, you know, where AJ would be. Because, yes, the original idea was she's holding him from the tail, dangling down, and then she drops him in her mouth. And that's another one of the problems was I don't think she gulped before she let her hands go in the plate. So we had to retime her hand so that that would let go first before the gulp. But we went through a couple of iterations of how she would hold him, and eventually we went with the... what's that? The sausage technique?
Which ended up, I mean, it looked right. Like, it looked like
it looked fine because her eye line matched up perfectly, and then the dropping of the hand worked fine. And I guess a couple of other things, like, she wasn't, her hand in the plate wasn't moving around too much as if there was a struggling fish in there. So the idea that he was a bit more in a straight jacket, you know, in a closed fist, meant that he couldn't really move around much more than that. Yeah, I think that was also a very satisfying demise for a character.
The thing about fish, AJ, is they're no match for a shark.
And, you know, if we're really lucky, on the behind-the-scenes DVD, we'll put the my reference that I shot for that.
Of
me lying on a couch.
Actually, we did see that reference. We need to incorporate that.
We need to put that somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's a good one. So then some of the questions were about how do we do the water. The water was, because we've spent the last maybe 2.5 years redeveloping our whole entire water pipeline from the ground up. And part of that is to do very small, thin sheets of water with correct surface tension, you know, all the bells and whistles. So a lot of that research was utilized for doing this. And that helped with the dome smashing, which was great because Everett Burrell shot some reference on set with a guy in a green suit smashing a dome. And we used that as a guide, but that was all simulated.
And the slick layer, that sort of mucusy layer, really helped for that extreme close-up of AJ on the floor.
Yeah.
Which was amazing he held up that well.
I know. Well, that was the thing. When that first came in, and the guys who, you know, who had done all the textures and shaders, like, ooh, you know, seeing that camera move. Boy. But then once we did it, he did actually hold up pretty well.
He held up really well, yeah.
Yeah, we only did a little bit of touch-up, I think, tiny bit on the eye.
Yeah.
And adjusted a little bit, but he held up well to that extreme push in.
Yeah, but that push in, remember, wasn't that tight. And then
Craig went a little bit further.
Yeah, and they were like, well, maybe we could push in a little bit. And pushed right in, and yeah, everybody freaked out with how close it was. And then in the end, it was fine.
Yeah, he worked out. Because we trying to figure out how the umbrella was going to show up at a pier and in the text and everything. There was original discussions was, does his pupil turn into the umbrella?
Yeah,
we thought that would look weird. And then so me and Paul Rayburn were just thinking, well, maybe there's these skylights in the ceiling and they look like an umbrella. And he just, as your camera lands, it happens to reflect those skylights that have that shape. And so that's kind of why the umbrella that has little cross marks, because it's like a umbrella skylight.
Yeah. Was that actually a real reflection, or was that a comp?
It was a comp reflection. He worked out a way to try and get it just the right angle at the right time. And we had a positive and negative one with a black umbrella or with a white umbrella.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
And sent them both, and they went with the white one, I believe.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Pogo?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So baby Pogo. So he started similar to older Pogo, that we received a maquette, that there was originally a bust that was done of him and some drawings that were done, and that was the basis for his look. And we did our usual thing where we'd take that and then kind of we'd compare it with ape skulls just to make sure all the anatomy
was
correct.
Yeah, just try to legitimize the anatomy a bit. Yeah,
exactly. Gino did some additional paint work on top just for the detail of what would be in his skin. We were always trying to look back at the older Pogo and make sure it looked and felt like him.
Make sure he still was the same character. So he's, because old Pogo had this a very distinctive eye line and a very distinctive mouth shape, lip shape.
Yeah. And, he actually did come together pretty quickly.
Mm.
There's a very subtle change that you have to kind of look for, but his Pogo, the baby Pogo has eyes that are like a true chimp, where the sclera, normally the white part of our eyes, is darker on chimps. And after Hargreaves gives him that medicine, or I don't know if you call it medicine, the serum, and he becomes healed and more advanced. He was always a super smart chimp. That's why they chose him. His eyes subtly change. The sclera becomes more white, like human eyes. And there's a moment of difference. So we had this whole thing where there was old Pogo's eyes that need to transition to that versus young Pogo when he's first kind of captured and goes to space.
Goes to training camp. Space camp.
Yeah. Which is based on what they really did with chimps.
With actual chimps, yeah.
And even, you know, we added even subtle things. It's you have to look for it, but when he's in the cage, there's little bits of leaf and debris and stuff in his fur when he reaches out to
Well, I think on the box it says he's from the Congo.
So they recently.
Fresh from the Congo.
Yeah. And I guess it is still Grace. Is her name still Grace?
I'm not sure that they actually say her name in season two. But
yeah.
I love how she's such a different character.
Yeah. She has like a Dallas accent. And
yeah.
So yeah, he was, yeah, so Pogo was, he's pretty much, although we looked at the older Pogo, he's pretty much made from scratch. And I guess with the facial, you guys had a similar facial, make sure his expressions were similar. And
yeah, we definitely designed his facial puppet off of the old Pogo, transferred a lot of those shapes over. But again, he wasn't as articulate as old Pogo either, so we didn't have to go all the way with his with his facial puppet. Which actually brings up an interesting point about his facial performance as baby Pogo, because old Pogo was voiced by Adam Godley, and we had a lot of we had video reference of his voice recordings, so we could base old Pogo's facial performance off that. But we didn't have anything like that on this one, so our facial performance was actually a little bit harder to reconcile, because we didn't necessarily base it off the actress who was on set doing the performance. So for Baby Poker's facial performance, we were really relied on video reference of baby chimps.
And I remember when we got the note to make him more cute. So in that first scene where Pogo meets number five, I remember we had to do the make him more cute. And we went super cute. It was
we went cartoony.
Like
cute.
Ren and Stimpy kind of super eyes.
Yeah. Pushed the big doe eyes, went like real Bambi eyes. So we made the eyes huge and the pupils huge.
Mm-hmm.
And made the mouth tiny and, you know, really super cute. And I think we even like pumped the ears up a little bit, got the ears flared out. And he started to look, you know, like Gizmo.
Yeah. So they would say, okay, you can dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, okay, you've gone too far. Everett said something like, we need to dial up the cuteness to 11.
Yeah.
And I think we hit 12.
Yeah, so we dialed back a little bit. Yeah, he worked pretty well.
No, it was, I remember it was great.
Like, first time showing him to Amy Minty in our let's see the department, and she's always so cute. So I was like, okay, well then we've hit it then. Once people who have seen him fresh has that reaction,
yeah,
then you're good.
You know you're on the right track.
Yeah, and then his scene where he goes into space. I mean, that was a fun sequence because we had to design a lot of that. Like they had only shot kind of rough cameras to cut to.
That's right. Know. They shot some green screen stuff.
Because that was something Everett and I had talked about. It was just a guide for them to start editing because there was a lot of it that was dependent on the music.
Mm.
So they gave them something that they could think about what the cameras were and how that could be edited together.
Yeah.
But it was nice because we got to do a lot of those moves and positions and designing a space shuttle, like those Mercury and Gemini rockets.
I actually modeled the first version of our previous
yeah
our previous shuttle.
Yeah,
it's just a cone cut off at one end.
But that was a good sequence, and I know that even if you pay attention to it, that the lights are even timed to the music, you know, as the compositors were flashing the lights on and off, it's all hitting those certain beats.
Yeah, because that song that it plays through it, we had that the whole time. That was mm-hmm. always there.
Yeah. It's like that other song with AJ that got stuck in everyone's
bibbidi
head.
Bibbidi bobbidi, bibbidi bobbidi, bibbidi bobbidi boo.
Yeah.
Boo.
I mean, it's always good working on the Umbrella Academies. It's a funny thing, and I think I've said it before, though, is actually, like, the fan base is so into it.
Yeah.
That when it comes out, they're just happy. Going nuts, and they're happy about it. So it's just, like, I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and there's hardly any negativity around it either. It's a lot of yes, 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 and happy, just good vibes around it, really. These two seasons definitely my favorite shows that I've ever worked on at Weta. But it's like the crew just makes it so good, and it was really awesome to get pretty much the same team back together on season two. We've got the band back together,
and it's always good work. You know, it's like with Everett and Steve.
Yeah.
You know, they make it easy because it's like, here's our suggestions. They're like, yep or no, but they're always open to like.
Yeah,
what stuff we want to
talk about. If we present them something that they hadn't thought of, that they're very open to like, yeah, that's way better than what we thought of.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about it is you feel like you can do that. And
yeah, I mean, you can make suggestions, and if it's legitimately better, they will totally go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're also just good. It's like, you guys do your thing. Like,
yeah,
we've given you some direction now. Do, you know, make it look
you
good.
You go do your thing and, get back to us when you're done.
Yeah, so that's good. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah, good clients, good crew. I think that's the best part of Umbrella Academy. So, hey, fingers crossed, season three.
You've been listening to Chris and Aiden on Unsupervised. Until next time, thanks for listening.